Welcome to the Aftershock Central podcast with Ronnie, Travis, and myself, Martin, the man who believes that Die Hard is the greatest Christmas movie of all time.
Yes.
Because it is.
That's a hot take.
No, it's not a hot take, it's a fact. Look it up, it's in the dictionary.
Hashtag alternate fact.
This has been a thing like all day, right? This freaking Die Hard thing. Yeah. Anyways, we took the week off last week, partially because I fell asleep, maybe. It's possible. But it was also Thanksgiving, so it's allowed, right? We're allowed to take a week off.
Lots of people fall asleep on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah, Turkey Day. So I hope you guys had a good Thanksgiving. I had an okay Thanksgiving. The food was good, though.
But I got caught.
Yeah?
I got caught up on comic reading, so it was good.
That's good, man. I'm still behind on the same books I was behind on last week. So I'm still behind on Batman. I'm two issues behind. I'm still behind on Teen Titans. Don't get mad at me, Ronnie. Mm-hmm. What else am I behind on? Exo Manowar.
Oh, I'm way behind on that.
I think that's it. I think those are the only three of the books that I'm still reading.
Does that say something, though?
The fact that I'm not reading it? Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, just like I have to keep reading Batman, I feel like I have to keep reading Exo Manowar. Because I've been reading it since 1993.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Even if you're Aaron Bell hate reading it.
Yes, even if I'm Aaron Bell hate reading it. I listened to your episode today, by the way. I was very surprised about what he had to say about Heroes in Crisis.
You? I was surprised.
That's a good book, though. I really enjoy it. Really enjoy it. You guys should do an episode on Miracle Man now that it's over.
We should. That's him reading books, actually. So
that's true. Good luck with that. All right, we're not here to talk about DC. Go listen to the Absolute DC podcast if you want DC talk. This is the Aftershock Central podcast. So we're going to talk about some books. You guys want to kick off with the stuff that we missed last week before moving into this week's book?
Hey, it's your show. You do whatever.
It's not my show. It's your show.
We can do whatever.
I just come along for the ride.
No news is good news.
No news is good news to be expected on holiday week.
I think there is something like hatching out because the last couple of days, Aftershock Twitter has been asking who we would like to see create with them. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of hoping that there's a couple announcements coming.
Maybe like your boy from Spencer and Locke.
Oh, David.
He'd be a good one.
Yeah.
I love that book.
So real fast.
Yes.
If you guys had two writers to come that's never wrote for Aftershock, who would you pick?
Evan Dorkin.
Okay.
Terry Moore would be good, but Terry's doing his own thing, so I don't think that would ever happen.
Terry Moore did Marvel.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's very true.
There's not necessarily a reason for Terry Moore to come over. You know, he does what he wants, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I number one for me, I think, would be Brian K. Vaughan.
Hmm.
I mean, I love pretty much everything I've read from him. And, you know, I love Jeff Lemire, but again, kind of like he seems like he's got Holmes at Image and Dark Horse.
Yeah.
That, you know, doesn't necessarily need to come to Aftershock.
VKV would be interesting. The thing about VKV is he's got a panel syndicate, so I mean he can do his own thing at any time. Because Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say they just put out that book Barrier, him and Marcos Martin, and I think Image did like republished it because that was part of the deal. Image is gonna do the trade for it, and VKV's like, okay, like we'll let you do it, but you gotta also put out the singles. Which, by the way, Panel Syndicate's an awesome company because you pay whatever you want for these books.
Yeah.
And they're really
awesome,
good.
How awesome do you have to be just to be known by your initials?
Well, I mean, he's not doing Saga, right?
If you have,
right?
Like, three names, like, then that kind of, like, it's, you know, a nice, distinct anagram.
Well, I mean, like, nobody calls Bendis BMD.
Well, that's true.
Right?
Yeah. Well, one of my picks actually is a three name person.
Oh?
Yeah. It would be BCM, which would be B. Clay Moore.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And then the man, the myth, the hair, Dennis Hopeless. I'd like to see him come on and do one too.
You're lucky we don't cuss on this podcast, or I'll call you a star effer.
No, seriously, like both of their, like Savage for B. Clay and Hawaiian Dick.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, Hawaiian Dick's great. Yeah,
yeah. And then what's the Spider-Man one? Arachnite? Is that what it is?
Oh,
Dennis
yeah.
Dennis is doing.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome, especially if it's Spider-Man and Moon Knight like mashed up together.
What's the other one that Dennis did? God,
Spider-Woman.
No, not, which I like Spider-Woman.
WWE?
I haven't read that. It's on my damn list of things to read. So maybe that's a fourth book I'm behind on.
Cloak and Dagger?
Cloak and Dagger. Yeah, that's good.
Avengers Arena? No, Avengers Arena was pretty awesome.
Cloak and Dagger's great.
Yeah. It's a digital first, actually.
Yeah, I'm surprised those guys aren't on there, because, I mean, they're, well, number one, they're local to you, so that's why you're peddling them. Shame on you, Ronnie. Uh-huh. You star uh-huh. effer. But they're friends
with
Cullen.
Yeah, but they're also on the network.
Well, not just that, but they're friends with Cullen, and Cullen does a lot of stuff with Aftershock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also does podcasts with us. Ha-ha!
That is true.
Dude, I can't wait for that podcast with his wife. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome. All right.
Hey, are they coming to C2E2? What's going to
yes.
be C2E2?
Yes, yes, they, yes,
yes. Yes. Yes,
yes, yes. Yes, yes, yes. It's going to be a big C2E2 party.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about some books.
And Joe Pruitt's not invited.
Ha! Lisa may be invited.
You can't invite the boss to the party, dude.
The honorable mention for me, though, would be Eric Heiserer, though.
Yeah.
Do you think Eric would do comics after what happened over at that other company?
Well, I tweeted about it to him.
Yeah.
And he said he loved the atmosphere and the pacing of it. And so if the right thing came along, he'd jump on it.
All right, Joe. I know you listen to this podcast. You need to reach out to Eric Heiserer and get with him and make a book. Eric's yeah. freaking awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, they're trying to develop for films, right? Like, oh, he's yeah. also a
well, I mean, one of the
screenwriter,
books,
so.
One of the books that we're going to talk about tonight, Adam Glass.
Yep.
And that's where he came from, too.
Yep.
And then Last Space Race, Peter Calloway, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Beyonders, too.
Yep.
So, I mean, if you can write TV, you can write a pretty damn good comic book.
Dude, I just realized Peter Calloway wrote the Cloak and Dagger TV show.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. All right.
Mind blown.
Mind blown. Let's catch up real quick on some of the stuff from last week. Pestilence, The Story of Satan number 5 came out. That's the end of the series. Anything you guys want to say about this book?
I've loved it since volume 1. And this issue and the volume 2 series is 5 out of 5.
I agree. I thought it was a great ending, and I hope they make another volume. Although, I was trying to think if there's, like, zombie story in... Spoiler alert if you haven't read it, in the New World.
Well, there could be.
Yeah, there could be. But I'm talking about, like, historically, you know what I'm saying? Because the book followed the plague, kind of. That kind of story.
Yeah, I mean, but the plague never reached the New World, right? So...
There was like smallpox and stuff that killed all the natives in the Americas. So, I mean, maybe he could go with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's historically still, a lot earlier than that, right? It's in like 1300s. So.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know.
Whole
could be cool.
New world.
Oh, Lord. What just happened? By the way, I am not going to go see that movie.
Shameful.
I am not going to go see that movie.
Why see it when you can watch Aladdin for like free at home?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, I think we've got it in VHS, so I can't even watch it because I don't have a VCR.
Just go buy a VCR. Go cheaper than a movie ticket.
I'm sure Amazon has them.
You know, that's where I'm looking right now. do they even sell VCRs anymore? Oh my god, they do.
It's probably a VCR-DVD combo set.
Yep, it sure is.
Dude, so people like my father can take all of his VHSs and burn them onto DVDs.
Dude, I should have, like, held on to my freaking VCR. These things are expensive.
Yeah.
They're like $400!
Yeah, because hipsters like them now. You know, like, the vinyl record players are back in style.
Oh, Jesus Christ. By the way, I gotta get a vinyl record player before I get my Matt Kent Kickstarter. Jesus Christ.
You should get a laser disc player.
You know, we have one in the attic. It doesn't, it doesn't work, but we have one.
Yeah, because it's melted now because of the summers in South Carolina.
Yeah, it gets like 150 in the attic. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I can only imagine because it gets hot as hell here in Missouri, so.
Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. I'm going to sell my Laserdisc player for $400 so I can buy a VCR for $400. So I can watch Aladdin.
It's like you're moving back in technology.
Yeah, I got this reel-to-reel film player. 16 millimeter.
Hey, don't knock on the reel-to-reel now.
I'm gonna sell my iPod Touch, buy a Zuma, and then sell that for an 8-track player.
There you go. Now you're talking. What's happened to this podcast? Are we doing the right podcast? Is this Aftershock Central? This sounds like something else.
We're doing the analog format podcast, right?
All right, Pestilence, great book. Go read it if you haven't. Let's move on to Hot Lunch Special, which I gotta say, dude, like, I love every issue. I think you guys agree. But this fourth issue was freaking nuts.
Can you tell me who the creative team is?
I can.
Okay.
Written by Elliot Rahal, art by Jorge Fornes, letters by Taylor, not Despacito, Esposito. And that's it. That's the creative team.
You didn't sing it.
Nope. Because somebody else.
He got that cease and desist letter.
Yeah, somebody else took it from me, apparently, so we're not doing it anymore, Taylor.
But yes, go ahead. This book is awesome.
Yeah, it kicks it up. So at the end of the last issue, we're like, how the hell are they going to get out of this? And they get out of it pretty simply by bribing the freaking sheriff into telling, or whatever this is, maybe he's not the sheriff, into like fudging the investigation, saying that he was attacked by this guy and didn't check him for weapons, and you know, he got shot, he shot the guy's back, one of them got killed, and then the other one just ran out the back door.
Yep.
Which of course is not the case at all.
He's got to explain away like possessing and then using this gun that was heretofore owned by Dorothy.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's no problem.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, we'll just say I got the gun for my birthday and I was playing with it and then that's how I shot him.
Okay,
they shot the sheriff.
Yeah.
But they didn't shoot the deputy.
No, they killed the deputy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, the other guys killed the deputy.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, the sheriff, like, that was interesting, right? Because on the one hand, like, basically he's handcuffed, so they could kill him, because he's a witness if they wanted, but... So they've got him in handcuffs, and they also like write a check to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of carried her stick, and so he's like, "Okay, I can make this work because if I don't try, then I'm not looking good."
So I had a question though: if you're trying to bribe somebody, why would you write a check?
Because this is like the 80s.
It was
okay.
He wrote it in cash. That's a thing, right?
Yeah, but even then, dude, like the check has the name of the person who wrote it.
Well, they didn't have like automatic teller machines back then.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess you're right. I guess this is way further in the past, so maybe they weren't investigating this kind of thing. But like, there's rules now where like if you go to cash a check that's like over $5,000, like the IRS will jump on you, right? Like the bank's not allowed to cash it. It gets put
for
on like
X amount of days.
It's like a 48 or 72 hour hold.
Yeah.
Cause they have to investigate the funds. I mean, I guess maybe at this time frame, they didn't have that kind of thing Or maybe the check is less than $5,000. But I mean, like, why fudge the story for less than $5,000?
Are you sure this is a period thing? Like, I don't know. I didn't necessarily get that read. Like, I thought they were using modern devices.
I mean, I don't know. It feels like 80s.
Like, yeah, to me, for sure. Because, I mean,
they never use a cell phone?
Yeah, but it's like a flip razor phone.
So 90s? Right?
Yes.
Mid-90s?
Yeah.
Huh.
Because the one fat slob guy, you know, he's on the toilet and he's using his flip phone to talk to the son's mom.
Right. To Dorothy, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll go mid-90s. I'm trying to think. What was big? The StarTech. That was the big flip phone. But see, that came out in like 01, dude, because I was in college when that came out.
Well, like the big ones that are like in Beverly Hills Cop. Those are like
Zach Morris phones?
Yeah. But because there was versions of those that were like flip.
I don't know, dude. I'm looking at the panel right now when he calls them and Dorothy's like, it's him calling. And it is definitely not a flip phone. It is a freaking like giant touchscreen phone.
Okay.
So maybe this is current era. Huh. I thought it was like 80s.
Oh, maybe it's hashtag alternate facts.
Okay. Maybe.
No, I mean, you know, because like, well, like the TV version, like on Fargo, it feels like it's set in some time, but it's actually modern too.
Yeah, that's true. Matter of fact, I just went to the next page. They both have, they just look like iPhones.
Okay.
All right.
So let me ask you guys something on this one, all right?
Yes.
All right.
Okay, so basically, like, in this issue, we kind of see Dorothy, like step forward in a major way, where she's calling the shots, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody is looking at her like, holy crap, you know? She's doing it, you know? Like, you know? I feel like they are following her lead, maybe if only because she's acting before they can stop her. And so she's calling the shots, you know, and like to the extent of like, she sets up this meeting to kill Big Jim and then she shoots his son and implies it's part of the plan. So I kind of wonder, like, do you think she really has a plan? And also, is she really being smart or is she just like desperate, has nothing to lose, and just wants blood?
Well, I don't think she's desperate, but she definitely wants blood. Now, what killing Big Jim's son would accomplish, I don't know, right? Because, I mean, I assume she knows that Big Jim knows that she's going to kill him.
Yeah.
Right? Because, I mean, like, Big Jim says that when they hang up. He's like, well, shit, she's going to kill me.
Mm-hmm. I think this is all a part of her plan, like, when she blew up on her dad and her brother in the parlor or den thing that right after her son got killed. Hmm. And like, that's when she like quote unquote mama bear instincts kicked in and she's like, no, we're ending this my way and I'm taking control type thing. And killing Big Jim's son, basically, what's an eye for an eye type thing.
Yeah.
Right. But now she knows that that's going to set the dominoes in motion to where, because she never wanted in this life anyways, so now it's either we're going out blaze of glory or we're going to be the only ones left.
Hmm. Yeah, could
so
be.
So it's kind of a reckless plan, I think.
I found it odd that all these other members of the family don't really like think through what she's doing. They're kind of going along with it, right? Cause when her dad is talking to the lawyer and they're like, we need to figure out what the hell we're going to do with Moran and this, that, and the other. And Big Jim calls and, you know, they have that whole conversation. She hangs up and the lawyer's like, you saved us. Like they couldn't come up with this plan. I mean, like they're the ones involved in this lifestyle.
Yeah. Right.
And yet she's the one that came up with kind of a solution. Like, why did they never think, like, the way out of this deal that's crappy for us is just to kill Big Jim?
Yeah.
Well, because, like, he's connected and a scary mobster, and I don't know for sure if that's what they are. You know, like, maybe they really are mostly just entrepreneurs and got into this thing with the mob, and he's always been the muscle, and you know, they weren't in, you know, they, he's not a criminal mastermind per se, you know. It's a little ambiguous in that respect.
I don't know, man. They seem to know exactly what they're doing in terms of the illegal activities. Or the dad, at least. Maybe not Dorothy's brothers. They seem like dummies, to be honest with you.
Well, he knows how to bribe. He's,
yes.
He's got that in his toolkit.
Yeah. I like the juxtaposition between the mob boss and the Currys. Because the mob guy has a daughter as well, and she's obviously got no idea what the hell it is her family does. She's just a spoiled rich kid, and he brings her along so that she learns what the family business is about. And I found that interesting compared to Dorothy, who kind of learned by her son getting killed, whereas this woman just has no idea, right? She's always just been a rich girl and whatever. But I guess this guy maybe now wants her to take over the family. And I wonder if any of that has to do with Dorothy's actions, or it's just like kind of a convenient time.
Well, if you know there's going to be a attempt on his life, I find it strange he would bring in his daughter who might get, you know, caught in the crossfire.
So you think he's going to use her as leverage?
I didn't know what was up with that, but it seems significant in a way.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's like, a little sketchy. Oh, I brought you here on purpose, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, but the thing is, what is the purpose, right? Like, is he actually wanting her to learn the business? Or is he gonna use her to do the bargaining so he never has to meet with Dorothy and the Currys?
Oh.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he knows that they're gonna try to kill him.
Yeah.
But didn't he got their room number, right? And didn't do anything with it?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah,
he had two secret plans.
He wouldn't do it immediately because the meeting's set for the day after the events of this issue.
Yeah.
So he still has plenty of time. And I mean, he's got a whole posse with him, so they could easily get all that set up.
Yeah, this book is pretty damn great.
Yeah, it's really good. Really, really good. All right, let's rate this one up. Travis, this was your pick. Give me a rating.
I'm going to 5 out of 5. I agree.
Yeah, you are. Uh-huh. I'm also going to give it a 5 out of 5. This is one of the best comics out right now, period, from anybody.
Yeah, I'm giving it a 5 out of 5, and this is might be on my comic of the year list.
Oh, my.
For the end of this year.
Yep. I'm with you.
Right all behind right. Exo Manowar.
Who?
Never heard of her.
All right, Ronnie. Your pick was The Lollipop Kids number 2, written by Adam Glass, with story by Aiden Glass, art by Diego Yapur, colors by DC Alonso, and letters by Sal Cipriano. Yeah.
Yeah.
Italians gotta stick together, bro.
Yeah.
Alright, tell me, by the way, before you continue, this book is freaking beautiful.
Yeah. That's where I was going to start off with. Not right. only is this a beautiful book, but I'm so glad that Aiden is helping Adam write this story because the kids actually sound and act like kids.
Yep.
And I think that drives a lot of depth into the story.
And I think it's really cool that he gets top billing too, right? Because on the front cover, it's Adam Glass, Aiden Glass, Diego Rapor.
Yeah.
So I think that's awesome.
I mean, how awesome is that? How awesome would that have been if you were 13, 14, whatever, and you have a comic book coming out, and you're at a con signing comic books?
Mm-hmm. Dude, not just that. Like, imagine going to – how old's Aiden? Like 12, 13?
Yeah.
Imagine going to – what was that? Middle school? Imagine going to middle school, right? And like your buddies read comics, and you're like, oh, yeah, I write a comic too. And they're probably like, yeah, whatever, like, let me see your dummy sketchbook or whatever. And he's like, no, here we go. It's like an actual published comic book, right?
Yeah.
It's like freaking Jim Shooter, dude. Like, his first book came out when he was like 13 or 14.
You would be a god at that point, and you couldn't relinquish it.
Yep.
But, no, this, like I said, this whole fantasy world and the struggle of, you know, what is what and why they're called the Lollipop Kids. That's awesome too. I mean, it's not just a write-off, like, little stupid thing, right?
Yeah, that was cool, bringing in Duke Ellington into the story. Yeah.
Yep. And then, you know, there's just so much stuff that's now that it's like your conscience, and then now that you can see it and your mind's opened up to it, now you can see everything.
Yeah, it's like the Matrix.
Yeah.
It's like the red pill and the blue pill.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, Steve Jobs doing LSD, but
yeah, that works too.
Yeah, so like, do you get the sense that now that he can actually see all these magical creatures, that kind of somehow that puts him in more danger, you know, like these things that are running around, the zombie thing at the end, are they normally running around the park, and just because they're on a different plane, people can't see them, they're not a danger? Or are they normally locked up and they're just getting loose?
Both.
Yep. Yeah, they talk a little bit about that in this issue, right? Because they talk about the monster prison.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So if they break loose, the monsters, like, are they a danger to everybody, even those who, like, haven't drank the potion?
Yeah.
Yep.
But we wouldn't. Since our mind isn't open, then we would just see it as like a house fire or a building collapse or, you know, this or that, instead of, you know, a dragon breathing fire on a house and catching it on fire or whatever.
Yeah. And I think to expand on that, the fact that these are Lollipop Kids, I think, does make it more dangerous for them, because the fact that they can see these monsters means the monsters, are more likely to go on the defensive when these kids come up.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you're just a normal person and you can't see them, like, they don't care. They'll do, like, whatever mischievous crap they want to do. And it might be hurtful to you, but, like, they don't need to feel like you'll try to stop them or attack them back or whatever. Whereas with these kids, because they can see them, that makes them more dangerous to you. And it's just, I mean, if you're an animal stuck in a corner, you're going to fight back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of one of the things that's that last panel signifies a little bit too, right? With the zombie.
Yeah. Is it a zombie or is it like I guess it's like a zombie elf, isn't it? Or a zombie troll. Ghoul,
I think it would be a ghoul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the lead character in this is, I'm sure it's like Harry Potter-esque, where he's the double legacy. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that makes it extra special. So it's kind of tropey, but at the same time, you're so engrossed in the art and in the writing of it that you're not even paying attention to the tropes that are normally there.
Well, I think when you're writing towards the demographic that I think this book would be targeted towards, and it's not necessarily like 12, 13-year-olds, but just like teenagers in general, right? It's more like a YA book than it is like an old man book, like for us.
Yeah,
even if we are really enjoying the book, it's not targeted towards us. So that's why, like, some of the language was a little weird. Like, there were a couple words that were said, and I was like, what the hell does that mean?
That's what I was talking about. See, that's what I'm saying. Aiden helping Adam write this.
Yeah.
He's, you know, because they even used lit in here, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there was one. Here we go. It says, "And either I got a contact high walking through the meadow, or those Lollipop Kids are waxing the truth." I'm like, "What the hell is waxing the truth?"
Yep, I only know that because my daughter says it.
Yeah, see, I never heard that.
Yep, and like the Bible or Bible means that you're speaking truth.
Dude, I heard that tonight. What was it on? Last podcast on the left.
Side stories. Yeah.
Yeah, side stories. I was like, "What?" Yeah, but nobody says that.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Weird. All
right, so let me ask you, you're talking about the double legacy, right?
Mm-hmm.
They also talk about, like, the curse of the Lollipop Kids, right? Like, it was a curse that was kind of, like, cast by the gingerbread witch or something.
Yeah, the witch from Hansel and Gretel.
Yep.
Yeah, so, like, I guess my question is, do you guys think that on some level there's not a choice? That, like, these descendants of those families, they are one way or another forced to do this?
No, because the curse has to do with them forgetting about being a Lollipop Kid when they turn 18.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to go back to that trope thing that Ronnie was talking about, that's also kind of a trope, right? But it's also kind of based on reality though, right? Like think about when you're a kid, right? Like you believe in monsters and ghosts in the closet or whatever, like monsters under your bed. You believe in Santa and the Tooth Fairy. And then as you get older, like you stop believing that stuff because you realize it's not real. And like, you know, this is set in like this weird magical fairy environment, but it's the same kind of thing, right? Like when these kids become adults, they don't like see that magic anymore. They don't believe in magic, so they don't see these things anymore. And you know, in the book, it's wrapped around this story of the witch putting a curse on the kids. But it's, even though it's a trope, it's the way things happen. And I think that's one thing that's cool about the book because like that's what fairy tales and folk tales are supposed to do, right? Like when they do the witch in the woods or whatever, it doesn't mean that there's actually a witch, right? Like that's a thing that adults say to scare kids not to go in the woods because the woods have bears and wolves that'll eat you. But it's much scarier to say, oh, well, if you go there, there's a witch and she's going to eat you and turn into a gingerbread cookie or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, yeah. Dude, I actually think that's interesting because I feel like on a meta level, one of the big things about this series maybe is like just kind of an abstraction of like how dangerous the park is at night, like Central Park.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
You know, like they're like, stay out of it. You know, it's like monsters, but really it's like it's dangerous in real life too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've walked to Central Park in the middle of the night. It's kind of creepy.
Uphill both ways of with snow.
It's not that big. First of all,
I know.
I just
thought you were going to go an old man story on me.
Well, I did walk to school both ways uphill in the snow. That is true.
Past the cemetery.
Was there a cemetery? I don't think so. But I did walk past a super creepy park. Yeah.
No, I agree with you, Travis. And I think that's the kind of parallels that make it, I guess instead of being like Harry Potter-esque, it'd be more like Peter Pan and the Lost Boys type thing. Because once they grow up, then they forget about it, right?
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, so one last idea for me is they kind of, in this issue, raise the prospect of, like, a major jailbreak that happens, like, once every 50 years or something.
Yep.
Yep.
You think that that's foreshadow for, like, that happening in this?
That's already happening.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that's already happening. That's why they're there, and that's why, like, that started in the first issue. And then that's why he said, well, that's dumb, because you know it's going to happen every 30, 50 years, then why don't you just build a better prison?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's when they come a part of that tunnel and all of the monsters are there, that's because they've all broke out already, and it's their job to put them all back in.
Yep.
Cool.
I love the little troll, by the way.
Yes.
Because one thing I liked is the comedic aspect of it, right? The interaction. But part of the reason I liked it is it did give you like food for thought on something without beating it over your head, which I know is something that Ronnie hates. Cause the interaction with the troll is about racism and stereotyping.
Yeah.
Which is also a theme of the book because the main character is biracial.
Yeah.
And we do see an interaction of him getting bullied because he's biracial. And yet he's judging this troll and the troll's like, don't be racist. He's like, now you're stereotyping. He's like, oh, you can talk? Yeah. Like, yeah, I can talk. Don't stereotype me. And I thought that whole thing was really funny and really quick, right?
He's a gremlin.
Is he a gremlin? Oh yeah, he's a gremlin. Yeah, that's right.
He says, "I'm gremlin and I'm proud."
That's right. That's right. But it's cool because that interaction happens very quickly, and it reiterates some of the themes of the book without being like, "Hey, part of this book is about race, kids. You shouldn't, judge people based on what they look like."
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the gremlin isn't a biracial gremlin, so maybe he like does internalize it, but maybe. What's his name? Nick will fall in love with, some kind of, gremlin or, or magical creature at the end, and it'll bring it full circle.
Oh, no. Lord. I don't know about that.
Maybe there's a
and then a monster would be a lollipop kid.
Because it's a legacy. Got it.
It's a half monster person.
Yeah. No, I agree. I like that double take with the gremlin too.
Mm-hmm.
At least it wasn't a huge Caucasian female that you got beat over the head that it's the next biggest thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the cast of characters seems very diverse too, right? Which makes sense because it's set in New York City, and New York City is extremely diverse.
Yep.
So that's cool to see as well.
Yep. And I liked how it went all the way back and showed you the, like, 1777 lollipop kicks.
Yeah.
They're holding America flag.
That's right. You know what that reminded me of? Are you reading Black Badge, the Matt Kent book?
Yes.
That's what it reminded me of. Because that's kind of the story of that, right? You have these kids that are like super spies.
Yep.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Boy Scouts.
That's right. Yeah, Boy Scouts.
Yep.
All right. Let's rate it up.
5 out of 5 for me again.
God dang it. 5 out of 5 for me too.
I'm gonna go 4.75 out of 5.
Oh Lord, way to ruin it.
I don't throw my fives around. You can't peer pressure me into a 5. Very good though.
All right, fair enough. All right, my pick was The Last Space Race #2, written by Peter Calloway with art by Alex Chabot. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Alex. I apologize if I'm not.
Shabow.
Colors by Natalia Marquez and letters by Marshall Dillon, the man, the myth, the legend. So the reason I wanted to talk about this book is the last panel, but I guess there's a lot to go through before we get to the last panel. Ronnie, do you know why I want to talk about the last panel?
I'm getting there real fast.
Okay, you get
the there. Morningstar one?
Yes. So they say call this object.
Because that's the thing that just went through.
Yes. Oumuamua.
Yeah.
So I thought that was awesome, right? Because I should have sent you guys the link to listen to this. I listened to a podcast called After On. And the guy interviewed the guy that wrote the paper saying that Oumuamua could be like an alien craft or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. And this is not like, I know, you know, Ronnie and I like the conspiracy theory stuff. This is not like a conspiracy theory thing, Travis. This guy's like head of the, astronomy department at Harvard. But he had like some interesting ideas of what it could be because nobody like knows what the hell it could be.
Do you know what it is, Travis, before?
No, I don't actually.
Oh.
Okay. So, go ahead.
No, go ahead. By all means.
Well, there is this object that was shaped like a cigar.
Yep.
And it went through our orbit and like at a high rate of speed, so they knew it wasn't like an asteroid or something like that.
Huh.
Yes.
So everybody's like, well, what is it? Is it like a probe? Is it an alien ship? You know, whatever.
So I recommend you check out the latest episode of After On because this guy goes very in-depth about this object. And like there's no pictures of it. Any picture that you see online is like an artist rendering. So it basically looks like a giant rock cigar. But really the only pictures they actually took were like an elongated strip of light, basically. So they're just like assuming that's what it looked like based on the assumption that it's just like a comet or an asteroid. But the weird thing about this object is that, I mean, it looks like what you see on this last page, right? It's a very long, cylindrical looking thing that was floating in space. And what makes it weird is something I didn't know. Apparently for like asteroids and comets and those kind of things floating around the solar system, there's like a ratio of length to width of the object. And generally that ratio is no longer than 5 to 1. So 5 times longer than the width. This object was like 10 times longer than the width. And it's the first time we'd ever seen something like that. It traveled extremely fast through the solar system, looped around the sun, and sped up actually as it was leaving the solar system, which is also something that doesn't happen. The rotation of it was extremely slow, so it rotated like once every 8 hours, whereas most of these things rotate extremely quickly because they're being tossed around by the gravity of the star, for example, like the sun. What was it that they called it? Something about like a resting ratio or something. So apparently all asteroids and comets and stuff, move around faster than like stars rotate around the universe. So like stars in the Milky Way galaxy move at like, 20 kilometers per second. And so all the objects that like float around because they're pushed out by the gravity of the sun or whatever, they move a lot faster than that. Whereas this object basically moved at the same speed as stars move around the universe. And nobody had ever seen that either. So this guy wrote this really awesome paper about like what it could mean were this object like something created by an alien civilization. Not saying that it actually is created by an alien civilization, but just pondering on the fact that like, what if it was? And so the whole thing was there was a paper put out. There's like all these news stories all over the internet about this thing being an alien like spy craft, powered by like solar sails. And, so that's kind of the story. And so I really loved that this was brought into this book because the story that's being wrapped around, I mean, this is the first time we've seen the object, right? We didn't see it in the first issue. But the story that's being wrapped around this thing is something that's based on something that has actually happened in our reality. And we don't really have an explanation for it because we've never seen an object like this before. And I like that this guy is stipulating that like, hey, maybe this is an alien craft. And I mean, the paper like just recently became like general knowledge. But I think it was put out a few months ago. So the fact that, you know, Peter just like came up with this thing, I wonder if he actually read the paper and kind of based this story on what he read, or if it's just like one of those weird coincidence things, right? Where like, oh, this guy, like, this could be an alien thing. I'm going to write this comic book about it. And I thought that was really cool.
That's crazy, dude. I was not aware of that, but it's super interesting. I'm totally down. I'm curious, kind of taking all that in stride. What we're really seeing maybe suggested right at the end of the issue is, that there is an international space race that like every major country is going to try to send up their own craft to, like to get there first. Yep. Or, you know, are you getting that impression?
Yeah, that seems to be the case. And the way we learn that is through this interaction. I can't remember the name of the main character. But the interaction between him and this colonel, and some of these other guys that are running this like secret space program to get to this object, to the Morning Star. And he's like, well, you found an alien ship in space. And she's like, how the hell did you come to that conclusion? And so he's like, well, you know, this guy was going to fly this test ship and he was a spy and he implanted this USB device in the ship, which led it to fail and explode. But, you know, only, like a hacker group sponsored by, a government would have the capability of creating this kind of thing. And it couldn't be the Russians because the Russians have been in space for, you know, 60, 70 years. So that led me to the assumption that it was the Chinese because the Chinese don't have this kind of knowledge. And the easiest way for them to get it would be just to implant a spy device and get the information. And why would China want this kind of information if it wasn't something that they needed to get ASAP and get the knowledge to get to this place? And so it had to be something really important that would create this new space race. And so therefore it has to be some kind of alien ship with advanced technology. And so we get like this whole plot thing, like really fast within a couple pages that sets up what the space race is about. And I thought it was great the way that it was told. Right. Cause I mean, he could have easily written a story of like made that whole spy thing much longer, for example. And like actually had the series be about the Chinese trying to implant the spy device and us finding it and whatever, making it like a whole big political thing, eventually leading to, the revelation of the ship. But that wasn't the case at all. It was done so quickly. Because ultimately, it seems like maybe that's not the most important part of the story. And the reason I say that is the first couple of pages of this book are kind of almost esoteric and dreamlike.
Yeah.
Because we see the main character like dreaming about space when he's a little kid. By the way, Easter egg, did you guys see the Space Ghost action figure on his nightstand?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
I love that. Space Ghost is my jam. But as he's having these dreams, you see like all this like philosophical wording flying around them, right? Kind of like a poem about the stars and time travel and all kinds of stuff. I thought that was really cool the way that was done.
But that's juxtaposed with, his family talking about how they can't pay the bills, right?
Mm-hmm,
so I wonder if maybe that's like his escape is thinking about the stars, you know? That's maybe my take on it. I guess I'm just curious mainly about why all the countries are in a race and they're competing with each other rather than collaborating, and like what the objective for getting there is.
Well, Travis, to answer your question, go watch Arrival, written by the previously aforementioned Eric Heiserer, and you will get your answer. The answer is people are feeble and stupid. And instead of wanting to help each other, we always try to outdo each other.
It's competition.
Yeah.
I mean, I can get behind redundancy, especially given how the series opens, but just curious.
Yeah. My reading is that people are terrible.
Yep. You don't even have to go to social media for that.
Yes.
Well, it's like we're going to be the first ones to show up to this UFO and get blown up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's basically it. Notoriety.
Yep. But think about it. If you're the first one there, you're going to be in the history books for forever, right?
Yep.
I was thinking about this. I can't remember what I was thinking about the other day. Because there's been like 100 billion people born over the last, whatever, 100,000 years. And think about like how many people you remember. Like how many people you learn about in school, right? It's probably like a couple hundred tops.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But what about like the billions of other people? So of course, like getting to be the first person in this alien craft with advanced technology, like number one, it's going to advance your culture more because you get advanced weaponry. But you're in the history books forever. Like people will remember you.
Yeah. I mean, he starts out admitting it's a suicide mission, right?
Sure.
They're like, there's no plan Sasha for coming does. Back.
Yeah.
Sasha does, yeah.
So I guess I just don't know. They're just like, they're going to get there and broadcast footage or something, maybe?
Sure. Well, not to the public.
Clearly.
Yeah, because all this is hush-hush. And it's all run by the military, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found this book really interesting. The first issue for me I thought was really good, but it was a very slow read. And I don't know if... The second issue I think felt more like the type of thing that I really like about sci-fi. It almost read like, I don't know if you guys have ever seen 2001 Space Odyssey, for example. But it was almost like a comic book version of that. Mm-hmm. And like the weird, like Kubrick interpretation of that story. And I liked that as a result.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yep. Cause the beginning is like the end of 2001 with the space child, the space baby.
Yeah.
So yeah, I dug it.
Rate it up, buddy.
Well, for me, it's a 5 out of 5. Travis is probably going to say some weird number like 3.7625 to the pi, whatever. But for me, it's a 5 out of 5. I really enjoy this book, especially now with this issue. I want to see where the story goes, because it seems to me like it's not going to be just a standard story about a space race, even if that's the name of the book. I think there's going to be a lot more weird, what's the word that Mike likes to use? Not pedantic. What's he say? Pretentious. That's it.
Pretentious.
Yeah. I think it's going to get a little pretentious, and I like a lot of pretentious in my stories.
What do you got, Travis?
I'll go 4.5 out of 5. You know, I like where it's going. I was interested that they kind of established in this issue that Freeman is like a narcissist as well.
Mm-hmm.
So like our really main characters so far are, you know, not super admirable as we're learning about them. Also just curious if you guys, you know, thought of any, significance for calling the UFO the Morning Star.
Well, a couple of meanings to that. So in the Bible, Lucifer is the Morning Star.
Yeah.
Which I think is telling based on the fact that this book is called The Last Space Race. And we saw, at the beginning of the first issue, somebody floating in space seemingly to their death. You know, hail yourselves. Satan's not necessarily, Satan's not necessarily the bad guy in some interpretations.
Yep.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep. Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Now we just lost all our biblical scholar listeners.
Yeah, well. Magustalations.
There you go.
I'm going 5 out of 5 on this one too.
Yeah.
Especially because of the last page.
Yeah, that
just
was
because
awesome.
I knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Dude, you should have seen my face when I read that last page. I said, "Hell yeah!" All right. Last book is we're going to talk about is the book that came out this week. And that is Beyonders, number 4, written by Paul Jenkins, art and colors by Wesley Sinclair, letters by Marshall Dillon once again. And I think we can compare this book sort of in theme and mood to one we talked about earlier, which is Lollipop Kids. I think this was billed as a YA book, right?
I don't remember. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And I definitely got that feel with this issue the most out of any of them, in particular because of the romance that has blossomed as a result of this issue. And the whole series I've kind of been hoping it wouldn't happen. But, you know, romance of the two main characters is kind of a tropey thing for YA books anyway. So I felt like maybe it was bound to happen, and it did here. And I understood why, so it didn't bother me at all. I mean, these two people are working together basically nonstop right now, right? And, yeah. And they're also, they play off each other extremely well based on the knowledge base that each of them has, mm-hmm. that's very complementary to each other. And of course they're like staring up at the stars, trying to find the meaning in constellations based on these secret codes they're finding. And, you know, looking at the stars is kind of a romantic thing. So of course it was going to happen. But I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. There was, I think the conspiracy-ness of things was a little more toned down in this particular issue. Which I would say is maybe to be expected as well, because now we're issue 4, right? This is a 5-issue series, 5 or 6 issues. So, I mean, you gotta start wrapping things up at some point, right? You can't just keep introducing new conspiracy theories. And I like that as a result. I mean, we do go to this church, which the church here is a big part of, what's that book? The Tom Hanks movie, Da Vinci Code. The church in this issue is a big part of that series of stories. And of course it's been like a hotbed of conspiracy theories for a long time as well. Since like the 60s or 70s, I think, when, that book first came out, was it Holy Blood something, whatever the book is called. The one that the Da Vinci Code guy stole his ideas from.
Hmm.
So it's been like a thing since the 60s or 70s, and that gets brought up here, right? Cause they talk about this place being like a heaven for conspiracy nuts for a long time. And that's what the reference is. What's that book called, Ronnie? Holy Blood, Holy Grail. That's it.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the guy. But he sued the Da Vinci Code guy for stealing his idea.
Yeah.
And
that's why we only got 2 movies.
No, there was a 3rd one.
There is?
Yeah. I don't think it ever came out in theaters, but Tom Hanks is in it. Cause I looked him up on Amazon Prime the other day. Yeah.
Really?
The 3rd one is on there. Yep.
I'll have to check that out.
Yep. And I think there's four books.
Four Dan Brown books?
Yeah, yeah. There's Da Vinci Code, whatever the second one. There's Inferno, and there's another one.
Okay. Angels and Demons.
Angels and Demons, that's the second one. That was a movie. I think Inferno's the third one, and that one is on Prime. And there's a fourth book.
Okay.
Anyways, this is more like a chase, right?
Yeah.
We're starting to wrap things up. They're at this church. They find some more stuff relating to the Templars, to the Croatoan thing. They find more images of themselves and the dog in this thing. And, I gotta tell you guys, I just watched The Matrix. So like, to me, everything's The Matrix right now. but like all this stuff about them basically finding themselves as symbols in all these different places they're visiting has me wondering like how much of this is actually happening. So I just want to throw that your way because you guys have not just watched The Matrix. So you don't believe we live in a simulation. But like right now to me, like everything's that. Everything's a simulation. And that's kind of the way I'm heading in this book. Because I just don't have another explanation to why these kids are showing up as symbols and hieroglyphs everywhere they go.
Right. Because we got told in like the first issue or whatever, or the second issue, that time travel was off the table.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, what if, in some respects, the representations that they're seeing as themselves are not super specific. So what if they were just misreading them? You know, like, it's like Nostradamus, right? Like Nostradamus, you can take passages and you can make them about anybody.
Sure.
Like about Hitler or Napoleon or, you know, George Steinbrenner or, you know, whatever. Same thing with like, they see a picture of, like a guy, a girl and a dog, you know, that's, I don't know. That's not the most specific. It looked just like them. So what if it was like, oh, the whole conspiracy thing was like a misunderstanding?
Well, but how though, right? Because you have these two warring factions.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the misunderstanding?
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, and they've been warring each other for a long time, right? Like thousands of years. So, I mean, like there's got to be something going on. But ultimately, I feel like there's certain things that don't feel like they could be explained. Here's the thing. Like, people always find meaning in the randomest things, right? And maybe that's part of what this book is trying to say. And maybe this goes to what you're trying to say, Travis, where, you know, to me, if they're finding a picture of a guy, a girl, and a dog, well, they're a guy, a girl, and a dog, so it's got to be them. And that's what they feel as well, right? Like, why are we in this picture? But because we have evolved to be pattern recognition machines, you're right. It could be any guy, girl, and a dog. It just so happens that they're a guy, girl, and a dog right now. And so they see themselves in it. And maybe that's why not everybody can see connections, but this kid can, right? Maybe he's just making the whole crap up.
Yeah. He's just paranoid schizophrenic in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'll buy that.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. But it seems like there's a lot of weird coincidences that would lead one to assume that there's got to be more going on than what we're reading in this book. And to me right now, the explanation is they're in the Matrix. none of this is happening, right? Like, this is the thing that I said it when the first issue came out that I hope is not what's happening in this book, is none of this is actually happening. He fell asleep during that storm, and he's dreaming everything because his life is so crappy.
Yeah, but then there's a sandwich waiting for him when he wakes up.
Right. But then you see that the dog is actually an android, and maybe he didn't dream this whole thing up. You know what I mean? Like, one of those – I don't want it to be that. And, like, the more I read it – I mean, I love this book. I love this book. I love Wesley's art. I love the way Paul's writing it. I love all the crazy crap Paul's throwing in this book because I love reading about this crazy crap myself in my off time, just like Ronnie does.
Yep.
It's fascinating. I don't know how much of any of it I believe in, but it's just awesome to read about it. And I just don't know. I don't want it to be that, but the more I read of all the stuff happening, I feel like maybe that is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like suggestive, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. Exactly that.
Yeah, it's like he sees this cute girl on his chat roulette or whatever, and then he has this like adventure dream about her.
Well, that's where he met her, right? It was chat roulette.
Yeah, Gnarlene.
Yeah.
Yep.
Gnarlene. And who calls their dog Shadwell? This is my dog, Agent Shadwell.
Yes.
Yeah, Shad is the sound that the dog makes when he farts.
Yes. As we learned at the beginning of this issue.
Gotta love good fart joke.
Okay, so, yeah. Dudes, what is up with this, like, blood that they find? You guys?
Yeah, it's the blood of Christ.
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, dude, that's what I'm saying. They're in Rennes-le-Château, right? This is the church where supposedly there was hidden information about the bloodline of Jesus Christ, that Jesus didn't die on the cross. I think that's mentioned in this issue, right? That he didn't die on the cross. Yeah. And so there's like a whole lineage of people that came out of Mary going to Europe and giving birth to a child in Europe. And there's like, what is it, Ronnie? Like a Scottish royal family or something, right?
Yes.
That's supposedly descendants of Jesus Christ.
Yep.
And so that's where the whole Holy Blood, Holy Grail thing comes. So in French, it's Sangreal. And depending on if you divide it between the N and G or the G and R is where you get the different meanings. So if it's between the N and G, it means Holy Grail. And if it's between the G and the R, it's Holy Blood or Royal Blood or something like that. Yeah, that's right. What it is. Royal Blood. Sangreal.
Royal Blood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in this church would be information about the secret bloodline of Christ, given birth through by Mary Magdalene. And what is in this thing appears to be vials of blood. My assumption being Jesus's blood. But I mean, he drinks the blood and then gets black eyes. So, I mean, it can't just be blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just a strange reaction to Jesus's blood.
Yeah.
It's a double vial, right? Cause when he snaps it, there's blood on one side or red on one side and then blue on the other.
Yep.
And he drinks both of them.
See? The Matrix. He took both the red pill and the blue pill.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's the grandpa black-eyed kid.
So now he's a gray Jedi. Yeah. Which is no longer canon, by the way. Shame on you, Disney.
Yep.
Gray Jedis were the best.
All right. Rate it up.
All right. I'm going to rate this 4.5 out of 5.
Travis?
I'm going to go 4 out of 5.
I'm right there, too. I'm going 4 out of 5 as well.
Fair enough. And we have one more issue of this, yeah?
Yep, I believe so.
Cool. That wraps up all the books. Next week, we have 4 books, presumably. We have Clan Killers number 5, which
yes.
I've already heard early reviews about that. Shame on you, Aftershock, for not sending us the books right now and waiting till Sunday or Monday. But the early reviews are apparently really good.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Arc number 12, Her Infernal Descent number 5. I can't wait to read that. Matter of fact, I might already have it. I got to check. Moth and Whisper number 4 is the final one. So another good week next week.
Yeah. Sounds pretty stellar. Or as the kids say, lit. Or extra.
You mean to say they're on fleek.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. All right. That's going to wrap up this episode of the Aftershocks Ninja Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Rumbar316, at The Great Magnet, at GeekMind, at AftershockPod. Catch you next time.